Warning, this show contains mature content and spoilers. Listener discretion is advised.
Ah, greetings. Care for a story? One of heroes and villains? Of swords and sorcery? Of romance and treachery? We'll pull up a chair and have a listen.
Welcome to the RPG show, and today you have your host, me, myself, and I, Kyle, doing another mini, because it's been a couple of weeks since we've had anything come out. Still everyone's getting through their summer things and getting into Final Fantasy VI, so figured I would jump on and give the fans a little bit of content. So here today, I've got DLC came out a couple of weeks ago. It is Sea of Stars, Throes of the Watchmaker. So per normal, the RPG show rules, we'll go over gameplay, story, visuals, music, voice acting, overall, how you felt about it, replayability, extra content. We rate on a 0.5 to 5 scale with half scores because Nick fucked it up at the beginning and then Kevin added to the fuckery. So basic premise of the game, like I said, Sea of Stars, Throes of the Watchmaker. The DLC came out a couple of weeks ago. Big bonus, it is absolutely free. So if you do have the game, if you've played it before, go out and get it. It's a good time, about 6 to 8 hours. Gives its own little story, kind of resets a whole bunch of stuff, but you do have to have a completed game to play that. So we'll get right into it right away, get going first off with the gameplay. So battle system, Sea of Stars, it's still known for the timed hits, kind of plays a little bit like Chrono Trigger otherwise, with three characters on the screen. You can do different sort of abilities, magic, attacks, things like that. Big premise in this game is that the enemies will have certain attributes or elements that you have to hit, fire, moon, whatever it is, and if you hit all those before they take their turn, you will postpone their turn, or just have them not attack at all. It's a really nice, fun mechanic, kind of puzzle-based. They did add in the last DLC that you can have these things hidden until you unlock them, but you can just turn it off with a relic. Otherwise, battle system in this one is pretty fun, honestly. So the charged attacks, they have changed from the main game overall. You lose your abilities right away, so it almost plays like an entirely new kind of game and system. Still the timed hits, all that fun stuff, and I think the new abilities were pretty cool overall. One thing that I really did enjoy about the game later on, kind of spoiling it for later, there is a late boss fight that uses the minigame wheels mechanics in the fight itself, so you can actually change the wheels and the slots to make the enemies attack sooner or not attack at all. It's kind of a super fun mechanic to have that, because I think wheels is one of the better things in the game, so really, really enjoyed that new part of the battle system. Character growth, for this one, you start over from level 0, basically. You go inside of a big clock, you kind of get this whole new setting, and you go back to level 1. You have renown levels this time instead of character levels, so everybody levels up at once, and you kind of just go through that, getting up to about level 8 throughout. Really didn't take too much to get to that. It was kind of fun. It was kind of nice because I hadn't played this game since the last DLC, probably over a year ago, honestly, and it was just kind of nice to get an easier lead in with this and kind of reset the whole thing, rather than just have you go into like a super, super high level encounter after not having played for a while. Next up, minigame. So this one, favorite part of this game for me, minus the music, would be the minigame wheels. Fantastic. It's like a slots-based battler with two characters. still the same wheels, but you do get a new unit in this one. They have the Warlock. It does poison damage. You do a little bit to yourself, some extra to the enemy, can get past the shields. It's a pretty cool unit overall, and they have about 4 extra wheels encounters throughout the DLC. So, like, that's pretty fun for me, honestly. I really had a good time playing it. I played one or two of them an extra time just because it had been so long. And like I said earlier, too, they have a battle that uses wheels in the mechanics as well. So, like, super nice tie-in there. Otherwise, the normal mini-games, your puzzle sliders, a little bit of fishing, nothing over the top. You have to do some cooking as well. Traversal in this one is, I thought it was pretty cool. So you probably saw this in the trailers if you had kept along with this at all. But the Phantom Train from Final Fantasy VI is in it, and you do get to suplex it. It's in the game. It's pretty fun. Once you do that, you get the train to move around the world map with. You can control it, and the track itself, while it loops infinitely, you can kind of go wherever you want. It's kind of nice that you can just choose to go where you want with the train. I thought that was a nice mechanic that I hadn't really seen in a lot of games. Usually when you get trains, it is railroaded, literally, where you can only go in one area, but this one you could actually control, so that was kind of a nice little mix-up there. Shops, I'm not even going to pretend like the shops were any different. They're just shops, same shops as the other parts of the game. This time you get tokens instead of cash. It's about the only difference. And then finally, what is unique? Unique for this DLC is it kind of felt like a different game, honestly. It felt uniquely different from the main game in the combat and the new abilities you had, kind of the change of direction with some of the elemental stuff. At the end of the game, you eventually get your abilities back to fight the last Scourge encounter, pretty, final boss thing, whatever. And you can tell it's like, I couldn't remember the normal attacks of the game because I'd gotten so used to the new ones from the DLC. And I just think that was like a little bit different than you normally see in a lot of DLCs. They don't mix it up that much, but I think they did a really good job of kind of keeping it fresh and doing something a little different than you're used to seeing in this. So that would be the gameplay overall, likes, dislikes. Like I said, I thought it was refreshing. It was kind of new overall with the timed hits. I know a lot of people have probably been playing Clair Obscur recently, and not that it's on that level of timed hits, but it's still a fun mechanic to kind of have in. So had a great time with that. Yeah, just really generally liked it. And again, Wheels is top 3 minigames of all time, up there with like Triple Triad, that sort of thing. So really enjoyed that part of it. I would give the gameplay overall 3.5 out of 5. I think it's super solid, and I think it's worth picking up. And next up, we have the story. So obviously, Nick is the pro at this, so I'll do what I can, but here we go. So like I said, you start at the end of the game. You have to be at an endgame level. You basically go outside, and you get a message in a bottle from Hortense saying that you need to go back to your ship, the Vespertine, to help Kenathan out with a problem. There, the whole concept is Kenathan mourns that his name isn't truly Kenathan because his tagline is, "Or my name isn't Kenathan." Just kind of the stupid tongue-in-cheek of this game. And you come to find that you can make that his true name by going to the Watchmaker and kind of helping out. So you take the Artificer, which was, I believe, Ciel and his buddies, who all kind of manifested into that one Artificer body, and they go and give you a teleporter from the Vespertine to the Watchmaker's workshop. You go in and you have a nice little story with her where she tells you that basically her and Aferal, the villain of the game, had a temporary alliance to build this clockwork castle, a structure that could control time itself. Along the way, Aerfol obviously does some bad stuff. He makes a evil seed cog, a seed of evil, that he sneaks into the pile of the Watchmaker unknowingly. She continually creates this thing. It's super awesome. The Clockwork Castle is fantastic. And then towards the end of it, she decides to make this little miniature clockwork world called Horlodge. And unfortunately, the Curse Cog gets used in that area. So after a while, she's finding that, hey, this little area is great, but something's wrong. She goes in. It's not her fault. She's done it perfectly 100 times. And she finds that it's this evil cog. And when she interacts with it, it seems that her essence is kind of taken, and an evil twin of herself called the Puppeteer is made. She knows that's obviously not super cool with Aerofol being around and scourges and all that kind of stuff. So she just seals the clock, lets it be. So that's kind of the premise here, is that if you can go in, fix that issue for her, she can then give Keenathan his true name back, and everybody goes home and has a fantastic time. And here's probably a big one for a lot of people. You then leave Garl. Garl stays behind for 99% of the game. He's in the very last part. We'll kind of talk about that in a little bit. But otherwise, he's out of the game. It's just Zale, Valerie, the Artificer, and then the pirate crew. So you guys jump into the clock, into Hortense, using some devices, and you fight through, find the little village, and right away, Zale and Valerie have your essence kind of stolen and your evil twins made. So that would end up being the Narcissus King of Zale and the Feral Queen of Valerie. There's also some others, henchmen of the puppeteer Piff and Poof. They're just kind of your silly, you see them a couple of times, fight them once or twice sort of villains. They rhyme everything, the two of them. It's a little annoying, but, you know, hey, that's just how this game works. It's got a lot of those cliches and all that kind of stuff. You also fight a elephant creature named Monsieur Tendu. Fight him once or twice. He takes your powers away. It's not a fun time. So get in there, get your powers taken away. Piff and Poof beat you up, and then the the Artificer goes in and he saves you. You get freed. You go around and kind of beat both the Narcissus King and the Feral Queen, and then you're able to finally go and get to the puppeteer and kind of wrap all that up. So story here, big one, I guess, basically, is that they show the darker sides of Zale and Valerie, being, you know, narcissism and chaos versus control. Kind of nice, because in the main game you didn't really see Zale or Valerie get really a backstory, so it was nice to actually see them, you know, get a little bit of play here and grow and have their own sort of things happen, rather just it being, you know, the story of Garl and all that going along with it. So thought that was a little bit better overall. I really kind of had a good time with it. Otherwise, towards the end of the game then, you get an interesting scene with, once you put all 12 trinkets into town, you get an interesting scene where Garl comes back, the only time he's really in it, towards the end of the game, and he's got a message, and, you know, if you put one and two together, you can see that it's a tie-in. This clearly is the prequel to The Messenger, where he sends the message along the way, and then you get a couple more things, and, you know, got a little bit of help from some people online with this one, but it seems that the later scenes between the Watchmaker and Keenathan kind of give people the conclusion that they are reincarnating into Muse and Phantom, respectively, from the Messenger. So I thought that was a pretty cool tie-in overall. I don't know if they're going to continue on with the series. I believe they might, because they've made two separate kinds of games for it. But it's nice to have, you know, that tie-in towards the end to kind of say, like, hey, we haven't forgot about you guys who originally liked the Messenger. Like, we're here for that whole story. So just kind of, I don't know, really, really fun, cool way for me, at least, for them to bring it all together. So liked that. Like I said, overall, this one did a lot better than the main game. I think the main game kind of got lost on a lot of people. I thought it was super cheesy and corny, and I liked it, and that stays in this one, but there's a lot less Garl, and I can see people liking that more for it. Don't get me wrong, this whole scenario is circus. It's based on circus stuff. They're clowns, cotton candy, ice cream, all that jazz, but it's just, I think it's a fun time overall. I think the story just does a better job than the original one. So I'd say give it a chance. It is kind of lame that you overcome your, you know, your evilness or your bad traits by just not giving into them and just being, like, better than them. They don't really say, you know, hey, I need to use you in a positive way. It's just like, hey, get the hell out. So I guess kind of different, but yeah, I'd say that's my only downfall on it. So just like the gameplay, I'm going to give this one a 3.5 out of 5 again. Like I said, better time than the original. All right, next up, we're going to start the quick fires here on visuals. So visuals, I really thought they were still pretty good. I can't say that they added anything. Well, They did add the kind of anime cutscenes that were in the earlier updates in the main game as well. Those do continue through to this one. I think they don't really look the best, honestly, comparative to other games. I know it's not as large a studio, and they probably don't have as many animators. But I think, I don't know, you could probably do a little bit better with that overall. The attacks looked pretty cool. I liked the visuals of them. I think that was pretty awesome. The scenes and setting themselves felt nice. But this game just does have a ton of reused assets in the main areas and the collectible areas especially. And that just gets a little bit lesser of a score from me. The other thing I had a real problem with is when you're using one or two of the abilities that it's a trampoline-based mechanic. So you just have to go under an X and like hit it back. There are times when it's very difficult to see where those X's are. Not only because they're too fast sometimes. I'm not saying, you know, just like a get good thing. But they just kind of blend in with some of the enemies and it's a little difficult to track. So I'd say that was a little bit of a lesser point on me there. So for visuals overall, I am going to give it a, I'm going to give it a 3 on that one. Still better than average, but not amazing. Next up then is going to be music and voice acting. The music in this game is awesome. It's really fantastic. It's really amazing. I would suggest listening it to anybody, especially the original soundtrack, the Bardcore versions, where it's kind of just in a bar acoustically, and they have a really good vibe. I really, really enjoy this. I even played in the background still, so I would go for that. They did a great job again. The tracks feel different and fresh and new. Everything just kind of like makes sense in its right place. It's an overall great soundtrack. This is one of those ones where you'll just like hear the song 4 times and just be humming it in the back of your mind for the rest of the day. I would really, really suggest that to anybody. Otherwise, though, the other effects, attacks, things like that, nothing out of the ordinary, nothing too wild. Just another quick one here. Again, going to give this one a 4 out of 5. Super underrated musically, this game. Absolutely go and check it out if you have not yet. All right, still quick firing. Replayability, extra content, trophies. It's DLC, so it's all extra content. Kind of cool there. And it's pretty easy to get all of the trophies. I'd say overall, the entirety of it only took me about 8 hours. I did use some of the easier relics to make it go a little bit faster, but the only real difference is that I barely had to cook any items and use them instead of doing that. But this game isn't like that difficult, honestly. As long as you have enough items, you can almost overcome anything that the bosses or difficult creatures will give you. It's just getting from point to point and making sure you have enough heals in between. That's really the only crazy thing, because, you know, the MP regenerates, all that kind of good stuff. So I'd say on this one, I'm going to give it like a 2 out of 5. You're not going to play it again once you get done with it, but at least the trophy content is easy overall, and you can kind of just jam through it to get back to that 100% like I know the other guys like to do. All right, finally then, we are going to get to expectations versus reality. I don't know. I expected this to be a pretty fun DLC, and that's exactly what I got. It was free, so that's, I should probably give it more points for that. I don't usually see free DLCs being this good. The story was decent, got a lot better than the main game, like I've mentioned a couple times. And I wish we got more stuff like this in season passes. The Aiden Chronicles DLCs came out. Those were like super lame comparatively to this. And while it did take a while from when the last game came out, I think it was kind of worth the wait, especially for the just the free amount of it. So my expectations, I'm going to give this one a 3.5 out of 5. I was pleasantly surprised, more than I thought I would be. It was nice to play something kind of more refreshing after getting through Clair Obscur and some other tougher games as well. So just kind of had a really good time with this. Way, way better than I thought I would. All right, so as promised, another nice and easy one. We will close out the show here. Didn't get questions for this one, just kind of dropped this when I had some free time over the weekend. Just shout out to the Discord. Thank you, everyone on there. Come and join the RPG show on Discord. We'll talk to you if you come in and say something. Pretty fun there. You can email us at therpgshow.podcast@gmail.com. We do have a Facebook, and we do have a, well, a small presence, but we're getting a bigger presence on Blue Sky as well. So check us out on Blue Sky, the RPG show. Did have some people from Blue Sky reaching out, and we'll drop a quick one here. Had a show follower, Randy Freak, want us to check out a RTS game that he's throwing together. Looks like a base builder, pretty early work in progress, but it does look like it has some interesting mechanics. And rather than controlling the heroes, looks like you're controlling the monsters and looking to defeat them. So if anybody has some free time or looking for some RTS stuff to follow, check out Endvasion, Endvasion, endvasiongame.com. Check it out on Steam, and thanks for Randy for following the show. So, yeah, otherwise, listen to our friends Blaine and James on the Is It Worth It podcast when they're back. Check out our buddy Mike at gamesmymomfound.com as well. And as always, thanks for listening, and until next time, bye, everybody.